The Athletic.
Totally Football Show. Today, Euro 24 in or out, asterisk, apart from the playoffs. As tension builds and nations across the continent struggle to remain continent, we preview the games that matter and England-Malta. Italy facing North Macedonia, Turkey-Wales paging Dr. Moreau, and the Republic's must-lose game with the Netherlands. Finally, something they're good at. All that and more in this Totally Football Show. Hey, listener, Thursday the 15th of November. It's an international weekend. Totally Football Show and the moaning's 16th. Already begun. Is it the 16th? Mm. Thanks for that. Thursday the 16th. This just in. That's Duncan Alexander. Hello.
Hello.
Duncan.
Hello.
Nice Date to have man. You on board. Duncan's got one thing to say, and he'll be saying it a bit later on. Adrian Clark's here.
Hello, everybody.
Fresh from a exciting live show last night in Leicester Square.
I just off it. Yeah, it was amazing. Yeah, on stage for the first time.
All right.
Since I played Franz the Butler in Sound of Music as a 12-year-old.
Adrian's
incredible.
Show involved feathers and a balloon. We'll be hearing more about that later on. We've also got with us the Athletic's brand new signing. Colin Millar. Colin.
Yeah, joined this week.
Joined the Athletic.
Yeah, it's exciting. Exciting times. Monday morning, I was the big announcement alongside David Cameron's return to government. So I wasn't expecting that. But I think if I can remember the difference between Aston Villa and West Ham, that will be a start. So
your output on the Mirror will be much missed because it was wonderfully kind of encyclopedic, but also in depth on some stories that were a little bit overlooked elsewhere. What are you going to be doing on The Athletic?
Yeah, I'm very much involved with the news team here. So it will be, I'll be working quite closely with the reporters and all the different sections, but I suppose sort of on the cool front, as it were, in terms of getting the news day to day. But I'd still like to be able to do a little bit of the in-depth report and stuff, especially with Spanish football that I've got a bit of a background in. So no, it's fantastic to be here.
Excellent. Very good. Of course, you'll be doing initiation later on, no? Standing on a chair to talk about Albania's qualifying prospects.
Well, that was the ambition. But it's Euro 2024 qualifying pod. It's what I was born to talk about. So
Perfect. All right. Who wants a quick roundup of the qualifying situation in 60 seconds?
Yeah.
All right, 8 teams are already qualified. I've got a clock running here. 24 spots to be filled. In Group A, Spain and Scotland are both through. In B, it's France and either Holland or Greece. England have already won Group C. Either Ukraine or Italy will join them. Those two teams face each other early next week. Indeed, Vincenzo Montella's Turkey have qualified. Croatia, Wales and Armenia battling for the other spot. Turkey, Wales next week. In E, Albania are almost there with the Czech Republic, Poland and Moldova squabbling over second. That's 30 seconds. From Group F, Belgium and Austria have booked their places. In G, Hungary are all but through ahead of Serbia and Montenegro. Slovenia are similarly close in Group H with Denmark risking missing out to Kazakhstan. Group I is anyone's guess. You've got Romania, Switzerland, Israel and Kosovo all still in with a shot. And Group J, where Portugal have qualified with a perfect record. Probably it's Slovakia for second. They just need 1 point from their next two. 12 places will be settled over the next week. The other 12 in the playoffs next March. Woo!
Cool. Yeah, failure. 101.
No, because that's because I was slow tapping the thing.
Well,
I think if listeners want to time that, they can, and they'll get all the answers they want. It all adds up to one thing anyway.
Yeah.
And that's drama.
Is there drama, though? Because it feels to me, as an observer of the Euro qualifying scene, that there's a lot of backdoor entry ways into the finals. So
a lot of repêchage.
Yeah, which is good for the countries who get there, but does sort of take away from the excitement.
Well, it does for you as an England fan, because all you got is Malta and whoever England are playing after that.
Yeah.
Who are England playing after that, Adrian?
North Macedonia.
Oh, I think, yeah, of course. But for your Italy's, your Wales, your Poland's, your Netherlands.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And I guess that shows the changing nature of the size of tournaments. And, you know, in the 90s, England really struggled to qualify for most tournaments and obviously failed in 94 and obviously failed in 2008 for the Euros as well. So it's been a long time since been in that position. So I guess that does, yeah.
But we do want the Nation League to matter, don't we? Because I think that when those games come around,
right,
if they didn't matter, it would be really dull.
But you're just saying the Nations matter doesn't matter for the Nations League. It only matters in as much as it is a backdoor route into the Euros or whatever. Then that's kind of a bit of a down on the Nations League, isn't it?
I also think it's not really explained that well. Like, everyone remembers the Nations League, and there's all the sort of A, B, C level, and then
Poland, Croatia, and Italy are all in line. They're all supposedly in jeopardy, but they're all in line for a playoff spot. Although the playoffs, it should be underlined, feature 12 teams going into the mix and only 3 coming out. And as, for example, Italy have found in the past, that doesn't always add up to a happy ending.
Well, that's the thing. There's not too much of a difference between so many of these sort of mid-ranking European teams. They're all they've all got a status which is comparable, isn't it? And then you look at teams like Croatia, who can get to the final four of a World Cup almost on a regular basis, and they're struggling to qualify. Italy, of course, won the last Euros, might not be in this one, not in the World Cup. So these qualification groups can be tricky. And actually, England's group with Italy in it, with Ukraine in it, that was a bit of a test. Now, obviously, England are a bit of an exception. They're very ruthless in the qualification campaign. I really do like the Euro format of having 24 teams in it, though, because I think that to have these opportunities of nations qualifying and giving them the chance to grow and develop as a group of players and for the fans as well, I think that's really important. And I just don't think there's really enough of a drop-off in quality to say it was a mistake to expand it.
I mean, our friend Michael Cox made the point last month that you should probably expand it to 32 because it's not that many extra games and, you know, it makes the groups a bit more exciting.
I can't see UEFA wanting to expand this tournament to include more than nations. Is the next one 32?
No.
One that's all over, no?
Not yet, no. And that is the thing. That would give the perfect sort of 8 groups of 4, 2 qualify, 2 go out. And that's almost been UEFA's problem, hasn't it? That a lot of their adjustments have been well-meaning, but it is quite convoluted in terms of who finishes third in a group, and then you go into this system where you're being ranked against teams who've played completely different opposition, obviously, in their results. So that in itself isn't ideal from a fan's point of view of buying into that, I think.
I just think 32 teams is just the cleanest, easiest way to do it.
Also, everyone might be able to get tickets.
Well, maybe. So that's a little bit tricky.
Sorry, Adrian, I interrupted a valid point.
No, just I like the fact that there are extra teams in the competition, but 24 just makes it wonky, doesn't it, in terms of qualification? Because if you know...
Not all the second place teams go through.
Yeah, it's a bit weird.
Well, amongst all of this, England are playing Malta, which is a chance for everyone to have a pop at Gareth Southgate. It's been a bit. It's kind of mandatory that you trash his selection for this game for at least something. Is it Raheem Sterling, Adrian?
Do you know what? I don't have a massive issue because as good as he's been this season, and he has been excellent. I think no one's had more touches in the box. No one's tried more dribbles. And he's on the eye test. He's in form, isn't he, Raheem Sterling? But I don't think this England team need Raheem Sterling. They've got a lot of quality in the wide areas. You've got Saka, Foden, Grealish for a start, Rashford, who scored against Italy, even though he's been in, you know, mediocre form for Manchester United. I can actually understand why he's missed out. And in a way, as an England supporter, I'd rather see Cole Palmer. I'd rather just have a little look at him over these two games than go back to Raheem Sterling. I don't think the door's completely shut on him. But at the moment, he's unlucky that there's such stiff competition.
And Sterling was the regular in that England attack alongside Harry Kane. They were the two players that were there every single match from the start. You clearly trusted by Gareth Southgate, and the last game he started for England was that USA group stage match, which was a year ago now in the World Cup. And he obviously had to leave mid-tournament. He had his issue with the break-in in his home in England and had to return, and then he sort of went back and he came on as a sub, but he never seemed to force his way back into the starting lineup. And
you
I always
can't
thought that
break
would
break in, ironically.
Yes, absolutely. I think it's a case where Sterling, I mean, his form has clearly picked up this season for Chelsea. He's a player that makes things happen. He's a player you can rely on to do a job, I think, in that attack rather than be the main man. But I mean, as Adrian said, there's so many options in that squad. And I think at the stage England are at, you want to see these players being given a chance because that's the point of these games, right?
Okay. Cole Palmer getting his first select force call up. Rico Lewis and Ezri Konsa also coming in for a raft of withdrawals. Bellingham, Colwell, Madison Dunk, and Callum Wilson. Duncan, a thought on the England lineup before we discuss Malta?
Yeah, I think, as Adrian said, Cole Palmer has been sort of the most exciting difference in the Premier League the last few weeks. And, you know, hopefully he'll get, I don't think he'll start, maybe, but he'll get a run out. I mean, the Malta fixture reminds me of watching the friendly in 2000, which I was supposed to go to something and I was like, no, I want to watch Malta England. And it was a really bad game. And it was a real sort of insight into how England were going to be really bad at the Euros. It was Richard Wright's only start, scored an own goal. Southgate came on. Kevin Phillips was up front. It was, yeah, it was warning signs. I think it's quite, if you look at the England team now, the 23 years later, it's quite different.
Right. Quite different. Richard Wright, that own goal. So that was a retaken penalty that came off the post, hit the back of his head and went in. And that, I believe I'm right in saying, is the only goal that Malta have ever scored against England. Adrian, is there more to this team than meets the eye?
Well, they've got a player that I do know a little bit about.
Okay.
In Jody Jones, who plays for Notts County. He's actually been really, really good this season. He's a left winger, but he's a little bit of a sort of Saka, as in that he can play left back, play right wing, he can play left wing, he's played a striker. Very sort of all-round footballer. But what makes him stand out in League Two is the assists, the crosses. Hmm. No one in League Two has got more assists than Jody Jones this season. So
really?
Yeah. So from that left-hand side, if that's where he lines up, we're going to have to stop the ammunition because he can deliver a decent ball.
Maltese cross.
Yeah.
Nice.
Jody Jones had 6 years at Coventry City. He played in the Championship for them for a bit, and he was a player that really made a difference in that team who were in League One and on promotion. But yeah, he's a standout player for Malta, and Michael Mifsud, who's kind of widely regarded as the sort of iconic Maltese footballer. He was also at Coventry for a couple of years. He scored the two goals when they won at Manchester United in the League Cup memorably, and that is sort of the thing with Malta. You kind of think about them as like this sort of, you know, one of the lowest ranked nations in football, and it's very strange how few players they produce. I mean, they've got a population of 500,000. It's bigger than Iceland.
They play on gravel.
It's one of those issues though that they doesn't really seem to have a football structure in place, which is it just strikes me as being odd how they've consistently struggled, how they've never managed to produce, even with the sort of cultural similarities with England in a way.
Yeah, they've got quite a big diaspora as well, haven't they? I mean, Jones was born in London. There's quite a big Maltese community. You'd think they would produce more players.
I've always pronounced that diaspora.
Said it wrong, I think. So okay. Diaspora. Thanks for the... Yeah.
No, just... I didn't want to come out of here.
No, yeah.
Yeah. Good. Okay, Ralphie wants to know a surprise name to make the England Euro squad. Who do you think might be a surprise call-up for next summer?
I'll tell you who I wouldn't mind being a surprise call-up, because I just don't think defensively we're especially strong. I really like the look of Jared Branthwaite, the Everton centre-half. I just think he's obviously big and strong, and you know he's got all those attributes you expect of a central defender, but he's really calm as well. He can play with the ball at his feet. I think he's quite unlucky not to have been called up this time around. I think he's been carried an injury of late. That might have been behind it. But I think he's got a chance because we're a little bit weak in that position. And if there are injuries, Anthony Gordon's got to be someone that's considered. Because, you know, this is a guy that's shining in the Champions League. He's been superb for Newcastle this year. Absolutely rapid, isn't he? I think he's beefed up a little bit. I don't know if he's been on the weights, but he looks a little bit stronger now than he did before. I think Anthony Gordon's got a chance, but we might have to be quick because the Scots are after him. The Scots are chasing him.
Are they?
Yeah. So I was very surprised he didn't make this squad.
Okay.
The next squad, I almost guarantee he'll be in.
Scotland need a goal scorer, don't they?
Yeah, Scotland are actually chasing a number of Newcastle players, oddly enough, because Tino Livramento can also play for them. He's been a star on the 21s. He's got a lot of energy, and he's somebody who's obviously had out a long time with that ACL injury at Southampton last year, but he's back. And then, Anthony Gordon as well is on the radar. Harvey Barnes, of course, is another. So it's almost like they've just gone, who's the closest club south of the border who we can target?
it's an easy commute, isn't it? Yeah.
Very 14th century. Just raid Newcastle and then pop back. Decent.
Excellent. Elsewhere in England's group, there are matches that matter. Let's talk about one of those next.
was sponsored for this episode of the Totally Football Show by Shopify. Shopify is the global commerce platform helping you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. It's your perfect teammate, the Sutton to your Shearer, the Heskey to your Owen, the Mane and Firmino to your Salah. Whether you're selling I Belong to Jimbo t-shirts or Max and Barry half and half scars, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, which is up to 36% better compared to other leading commerce platforms. Plus, you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And what's more, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 support is there to help your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Now, because you listen to the Totally Football Show, you can sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/totally, all in lowercase. So go to shopify.com/totally to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. That's shopify.com/totally.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Before you get back to this Athletic podcast, did you know it's just one of many made by The Athletic every week? I'm Abby Patterson, senior producer here at The Athletic, and I get to work across so many of our shows. But even I have my favourites. Sometimes you're just too busy for a full-length podcast. I get it. We've all been there. Well, we've got a show to help you. Get up to speed with all the football stories you need to know about with our daily football briefing.
It's done and dusted. Saudi Arabia will host the 2034 World Cup.
Got a bug for the women's game? Then Full-Time Europe is for you. It's our dedicated women's football podcast answering the questions you're asking from the WSL and Champions League.
So what's going wrong at Arsenal?
But perhaps you want to know exactly how a team has set itself up. Then come to the audio whiteboard and join Michael Cox and our analytics gurus as they dissect and examine the game like nobody else can. That's on the Athletic Football Tactics podcast.
I don't think I've ever seen a striker who reads the game so well.
Just search The Athletic wherever you're listening to this podcast now, and you'll find your next podcast obsession in no time at all. Now, let's get back to your show.
This is the Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. The Athletic is the only place you can read articles by Daniel Taylor, Amy Lawrence, Phil Hay, James Pearce, Ollie Kay, and the very best football writers around.
Forza Napoli writes in, says, can Duncan rev up his computer? Because that's how they work, Duncan.
Yeah.
And please tell us that Italy will indeed qualify for the Euros 2024. Also, I know you guys love to chat about food, so what are all your favourite pasta dishes? Very quickly, Adrian, pasta dish you like.
Name a pasta dish. Just
coming to you.
Spaghetti bolognese. I mean, that's a classic.
Yeah. Tagliatelle.
That's actually a pasta. What's the sauce you want?
It depends.
It does depend.
Yeah. I got cacio e pepe.
Oh, that's nice. Oh,
that's a good, that is a good choice, yeah.
Spaghetti alle vongole for me.
Yeah. Culture kids. Yeah.
Sorry, yeah. Tuck into your bolognese.
Just like a bolognese.
Yeah. Like a bolognese. Nice.
Made one the other day. Very
right.
Nice. Yeah.
Okay, well, it's time to talk not to spaghetti, but Spalletti with Italy. We're taking on North Macedonia. Ooh. And then Ukraine in their next final two qualifiers, indeed. Italy, who missed the last two World Cups, won the Euros in between, now risk missing out on the next edition of the Euros. They're third in the group, with their manager, previous manager Roberto Mancini, bravely running off for Saudi cash just ahead of the key games. And North Macedonia up on Friday. Let's remind ourselves of what happened last time they faced North Macedonia famously in those World Cup playoffs, March 2022. 5 minuti di recupero, si andrà avanti fino al cinquantesimo per effetto dei cinque concessi. Attenzione al tiro. Rete. Ha segnato la Macedonia del Nord. Ha segnato la Macedonia del Nord. Incredibile. Incredibile. James Horncastle joins us now. James. North Macedonia, eh? Drama, assoluto e totale.
Yeah, as usual, James. They don't have a good record against North Macedonia. Just when they thought they were getting over what happened in the World Cup playoff, the first game that Luciano Spalletti had in charge was against North Macedonia, the ghosts of that night in Palermo. And they drew in, what, the Alexander of Macedon Stadium or something like that. Gigi Donnarumma, who is actually having a fine season with Paris Saint-Germain, whenever he sees North Macedonia, seems to panic have a poor night. That was the case back in September. But yeah, big game, James. I mean, if they win this, it does really put them in the driving seat against Ukraine. They are currently third in the group. They're 3 points behind Ukraine, but they have a game in hand. They also have head-to-head in hand. They have a superior goal difference. And that would mean that they could go to Leverkusen for the game against Ukraine and feasibly draw that game and qualify automatically.
Mm. If Italy would lose this game, though, it would be Ukraine who would be through with a draw. So Spalletti's first game didn't go well, and their last game didn't go that well either. But how do you feel about how things have been going for Italy under their new manager?
I think it's hard to judge or criticise Spalletti so far because, you know, he was supposed to be on his Tuscan farm with his ducks on the tractor. Rather than being coach of his national team at this moment in time. He was parachuted in because Roberto Mancini decided to make 25 million euro a year working for Saudi Arabia. So he's come into quite a delicate situation. I listened to his press conference the other day. He was actually pretty upbeat despite the loss to England at Wembley last time around. He said that there were lots of shafts of light that he could see in that performance. It wasn't all to throw away. There are things that he would like to double down on. And I think ultimately Italy are not judging themselves on the performances against England at this moment in time. It's about the performances in the other games. And in fairness, you know, for an hour against North Macedonia, they played well. He's made some tough decisions. You know, he's left Ciro Immobile out of the squad again. So, you know, he's very much backing the likes of Scamacca to be the difference in these ties. And it's still very early to judge this team, even though we are in judgment day territory, considering that's just how the fixture calendar works. But I doubt if they were to lose to North Macedonia and, I don't know, not qualify via the group, because let's not forget that Italy are guaranteed a playoff. They could finish bottom of this group and still be in the playoffs just because they've reached the final four of the Nations League. I think people would find very little fault with Spalletti just because, you know, it'd be mad to judge a guy on what, six games really, when he's only been in the job literally 2 months.
Mm. Playoff opponents might be the likes of Croatia and Poland, though. But yes, scoring was a problem for Italy, or had become a problem for Italy, particularly in the last games under Mancini. How excited are you about the lineup or the squad that Spalletti's put together for this game and the arrival of, say, Colpani in there?
Yeah, I mean, there are a couple of new faces. Colpani, who's been one of the revelations in Serie A this season at Monza. We wrote about him on The Athletic. Sort of plays. I mean, he'll play as a number eight for Italy. It's a different system from what he plays with Monza, which is 3-4-2-1. This has kind of been a bit of a problem for Italy, really, over the last few years, is the prevalence of that system in Serie A, because, you know, Mancini wanted to play 4-3-3. Spalletti's more or less always played 4-3-3. And so you've got a lot of players who are excelling in something entirely different. I mean, even going back to that England game where they're playing a back four, they're playing it with guys who are used to playing in a back three. And I think that was one of the problems that, that the team faced.
I thought Italian players were meant to be the most tactically flexible in the world, though.
True. But, you know, I think it's one thing to oversee a transition, you know, let's say when you've got a few weeks to work with the players in pre-season or, you know, over the course of the games, when you're constantly being interrupted. And like in this case, yeah, Spalletti only has like 7 days with the players. Yes, it's a two-week international break, but they'll play on Friday and then they play on Monday and that's it. You know, so he has a week with them. So, yeah, even the international breaks get shorter and shorter. So, you know, that's not helping. And then, of course, you've got, you know, sort of various betting scandals going on around, which you never know which players you can count on, which is not an easy situation for any coach. I mean, again, you know, when people judge Spalletti, they ought to be thinking about what happened in the October international break when police showed up at the training ground and basically said, we need to talk to two of your players. And then those two players were sent home. Zaniolo is back in the squad. Because, you know, ultimately his situation is different from those of Sandro Tonali and Fagioli, but these are all complicating factors, really. So it's a difficult job, James, but someone's got to do it.
Mm-hmm. Not ideal at all. One Italian that's really impressed me this season, James, is Vicario, the Spurs keeper. Is he pushing Donnarumma for a start, or is he untouchable?
It's a good question, because already in Spalletti's second game, you know, after they drew with North Macedonia away, because Donnarumma was seen as culpable for letting in this sort of late free kick North Macedonia scored, the press were already on Donnarumma's back. The press are a little bit like the Milan ultras in the Curva Sud in San Siro. They never waste an opportunity to kind of jump on Donnarumma, and so. Already in Spalletti's second game, he was being asked to make a big decision and promote Vicario. And Spalletti's big decision was to actually back Donnarumma. And Donnarumma ultimately playing at San Siro, where he was whistled every time he touched the ball, still played well enough in what could be a decisive game in this group, which was the 2-1 win over Ukraine, which has given them the head-to-head. So, as good as Vicario has been, you know, even in that defeat to Chelsea, I'd say Donnarumma between the last international breaks has been fantastic as well. You know, even in the defeat to AC Milan at San Siro for Paris Saint-Germain, he made a couple of incredible saves in that game. Even though Mbappe scored a hat-trick at the weekend, you know, he was posting on Instagram how Donnarumma should have got the Man of the Match award. He was that good. I mean, it's great that they have a lot of really good goalkeepers in Italy at the moment. I mean, the guy whose third choice, Ivan Provedel, was the goalkeeper of the year in Serie A last year, kept 21 clean sheets and, you know, scored for Lazio against Atletico Madrid. So, I mean, they're not short of very good goalkeepers. But I do think Donnarumma isn't untouchable at the moment. It takes something really dramatic for him to lose his place.
Magnificent. All right, well, they're going to be playing at the Stadio Olimpico in Rome on Friday night. As you mentioned, Italy have the head-to-head advantage over Ukraine. So if they do beat North Macedonia Friday, all they need is a point on Monday in Leverkusen. James, are they going to do it?
I don't know, James. I mean, you know, I mean, I would have thought they would have at least got to the playoff final last time around because for the World Cup in Qatar, because the defeat to North Macedonia in Palermo was a playoff semi-final. They were due to go to play Portugal in Porto after that, which I think a lot of people were quite realistic about their chances of actually overcoming Portugal in that game. Mm. I think they can and will do it, but, you know, I thought they couldn't and would do it against Sweden in 2017.
So. Yeah. Do you know, they didn't score a single goal in any of those three playoff matches, the two ties with Sweden for 2018 and then that home game to North Macedonia, extraordinary. Anyway, hopefully they'll be banging them in, with all due respect to North Macedonia, on Friday. James, thank you so much for joining us today.
Pleasure.
Duncan, does that tally with what the supercomputer says?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, there's an argument, I would say, that as holders they should be qualify anyway.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I agree with that.
All right then. Next up, more drama from these Euro qualifiers and some other things from around the world of football.
Why are so many big stars missing from the Women's Champions League? Do we really need VAR in the women's game? Have Arsenal got too many players? Hello, I'm Sophie Penny, and I'm the host of the all-new Full-Time Europe, The Athletic's women's football podcast. If you're a big women's football fan, or a passing purveyor of the game, Full-Time Europe is answering the questions you're asking. From Man United to Lyon, Barcelona to Wolfsburg, we have you covered. That's Full-Time Europe, out every week, available wherever you're listening now.
This episode is supported by Season 3 of FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small-town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League 2 after 15 seasons in the National League. Dedicated staff and supporters celebrate the city's return to glory while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in a higher division. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenges and rise again into League 1? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
You're listening to The Totally Football Show with James Richardson, the Sports Podcast Awards Soccer Podcast of the Year.
Okay, Totally Football Show getting sorted for the Euro 2024 Championship in Germany. Are you looking forward to this tournament after the wonderful World Cup that they staged in 2006?
Yeah, I am. I think Germany are a really good host country in terms of the infrastructure that they have. It's a very, very strong football country, the cities that they've got as well. In terms of logistically, and obviously there has been a bit of an issue with the early ticketing release, that people are a little bit unhappy about, that they're a little confused about as well. But I think the actual infrastructure is in place within Germany itself should theoretically make this quite good.
So, and quite a few people writing in about this. Actually, a lot of England fans disappointed that they applied for loads and loads and loads of tickets.
The bots
and didn't
snapped
get
them up,
any.
Didn't they?
Well, there were apparently over 20 million requests, genuine requests, say UEFA, because they feel that their software has weeded out the bots. And they think that they have had 20 million genuine applications by supporters for an initial release of just 1.2 million tickets. So you can understand how a lot of people in that scenario are going to end up with nothing. But yeah, I don't know whether it could have been done better or what.
Yeah, it's strange. I know Daniel Story had a good piece on this in the Eye yesterday, and it was sort of an explainer and just in terms of how people had sort of tried to get so many tickets all at once, which was the kind of the premise, I think, of this release, that you could buy in bulk essentially, and they would have put aside quite a bit of money to put into the system. And when you're doing that, obviously via an online process as well, things can quite easily go awry. And people end up with nothing from that. And that's, I guess, that's the kind of the staggered ticketing release. And I know UEFA have had issues with this in the past. It's a difficult one to get right. But I mean, I guess that there should be some sort of priority system in terms of people who have membership schemes with the teams, and especially with away travel and that sort of thing. But I don't think that's
yeah, that always used to be the case. The England sort of, you got points for going to England games and that really helped. But yeah. It should be like Euro 96 when no one turned up, but no one mentions that, so we'll move on.
All right, well, a magnificent tournament for whoever does make it in prospect. The final in Berlin, and Segway Ahoy, speaking of final games in Berlin, this week brought news that Urs Fischer has had his at Union. What a sad story, this one. Union, who had lost 12 straight games, then extraordinarily managed to get a point away at Napoli in the Champions League, leading to the dismissal of their manager, then lost again this weekend by Leverkusen 4-0, and their manager's gone too. This is not just any old firing, is it, Colin?
Not at all. I mean, obviously the coach had been there, had brought them into the Bundesliga in this sort of unprecedented period of success for the club, built on it, improved finish year on year, obviously taken into the Champions League, which is
Actually the reigning manager of the year in Germany.
Yep. And actually, if you look at their Champions League performances, I mean, they were incredibly unlucky in some of those games.
Well, okay, so there's one in particular that people point to, the clash with Braga, where they were 2-0 up and then in the dying minutes ended up losing 3-2 as being almost the moment where it all collapsed. Because I've not really seen a breakdown on why Union can't get a result now.
So last year they had the 12th best XG differential in the Bundesliga and massively overperformed. This year they got the 12th best and they're underperforming. And that's the variance you know, they kind of lived the dream last season and it kind of can't be sustained. And I think this is where clubs, I can understand why he's gone, but they also kind of need to understand that last year was the outlier, not this year. And kind of you know, possibly he is the best person to have turned it around.
From a lot of the reporting, it does seem like Oz himself has
yeah, you can
taken
understand
the decision that he burnt out.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, all those successive losses. Think what it does to the morale of the dressing room. Sometimes you just have to make a change to break that cycle.
The emotional side of this as well. I mean, this is something that does happen for clubs and for dressing rooms and for managers whenever you go through this period of sustained success, especially when it is that overachievement. And then things just slightly turn a little bit. It's very hard to take that momentum back. And I mean, they must just be, the individuals involved must be exhausted in one hand and those last minute defeats.
We've seen it in the Premier League. I remember Hull came up and had a great start. They won away at Spurs, won away at Arsenal, and you know, and then basically lost every game from November onwards and just about stayed up. And Blackpool had similar and couldn't quite stay up. And you do get, like, when the vibe runs out, it really runs out.
Football teams live in the moment. They live in the moment. Really, what went before is ancient history if you're in a dressing room, because it's all about the here and now. And everything moves so quickly in football that you just have to park what went before and think about the now. And if the now is a nightmare, then you have to do something about it.
I think the best Premier League equivalent to this was Brendan Rodgers at Leicester, right? The fact that so close on two occasions to two consecutive top four finishes, missed out pretty much the final day each season, wins an FA Cup. And then when that sort of incredible two and a half seasons ran out, it felt like it had really run out. And whenever you get into that rut, it's...
Looking back, I've played in a few struggling teams during my career, but a week in a bad team feels like a month, because you go into training, it's tense, everyone's a little bit grumpy, the manager's certainly a bit grouchy, everything's super competitive, and it's just not always that nice an environment until you get the results. So to go 2 weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, 5 weeks, that must be a living nightmare.
How much of a difference does it make when a new face comes in as manager?
It's like a reset button. It's weird. Yeah, it doesn't mean that's going to work long term, but we've seen it over and over, haven't we? The just having a fresh voice with someone with new ideas can just be the jolt you need to get out of that rut.
I see. Well, what Union Berlin have decided to do is appoint the youth coach Marco Grote, pending Rafa's approval on that pronunciation, as the interim manager. There's kind of talk of them having three games until they sort out more permanent.
It's a female assistant,
right? With the first ever female assistant coach in the men's Bundesliga. That's Maria Louise Etter, who won the Champions League as a player with Turbine Potsdam. They won the league three times, Turbine Potsdam. In the Bundesliga, the Frauen Bundesliga, and then the Women's Champions League as well. She played under her maiden name of Bughorn back in those days. Anyway, first women's coach to appear on a men's Bundesliga bench, but first of many, I would think. No, a lot of talk about female managers or coaches who could very much do a job for teams.
This is something that you do see a lot more, especially at men's sort of youth team level. I think Brentford appointed an under-18s coach, and that was sort of like seen as a sort of groundbreaking achievement. Obviously, Forest Green Rovers had done an interim appointment in the summer, and that was Hannah Dingley, who had sort of been risen through there. She'd coached their academy, being a first-team coach within the setup under Duncan Ferguson and before that. So I think that's almost like the pathway in, because whenever we talk about kind of women's managers coming to men's football, people tend to talk about people like Emma Hayes or Sabrina Wegman, but I think it's almost that background which will help you just to understand the environment, because I think that's more, maybe more the natural path that football is going to go on in the next couple of years.
All right. Speaking of Emma Hayes, busy midweek for her as the Women's Champions League got underway, and Chelsea we're up against Real Madrid in Madrid. It finished 2-2. Some controversial moments in that game, though. Was anyone watching this?
I saw the goals. Yeah. Well, I saw the highlights of the game. I mean, they were absolutely robbed in terms of the penalty.
Right. The second Real Madrid goal was the penalty?
Yes, it was, yeah. Del Castillo. Oh, down she goes. From Fleming. Penalty. Oh, the referee. She took a long time in making the call. So basically Fleming, the left back, was tracking back. I don't actually feel that she made contact with the player either. I think it was both a dive and...
It's a metre outside the box.
No, I think 3 yards outside
three
the box.
3 yards outside the box.
Like, I was looking at it over and over and I was thinking, it's not even close. Mm. Right. But what was... I will occasionally forgive a referee for something like that. Obviously, we can all make mistakes. But the assistant referee was bang in line with it on that side of the pitch. I think it's unforgivable that the two officials made such a botched job of that. And, you know, that could be costly. Chelsea are in quite a tricky group there with Real Madrid and Paris FC, who have already dumped out Arsenal and Wolfsburg. So no wonder Emma Hayes was fuming. I wouldn't want to, you know, get on the wrong side of Emma Hayes either. She can be pretty scathing. So, they were unlucky.
No VAR in the Women's Champions League, of course.
Yeah, exactly. And this is it's whenever it's not there, happen.
You see it in the EFL everywhere where people are begging for VAR, and then everyone in the Premier League is like, it's ruining the game. It's like, I think ultimately people just don't like seeing their team concede goals. That's the essence of football. I think we've boiled down to that point now. But just on that penalty, the Madrid player, to be fair, does do an incredible job of getting quite a far way into the box afterwards, which is...
Okay.
Well, there were multiple sort of half challenges within it that kind of meant here, and that, I think that's when you understand from a referee's point of view that they might see that they're not properly positioned. There was also the offside call in literally the last second of the game, and
over Neil Charles.
Yes, and this is one of those instances whereby we always talk about offsides being black and white, but actually there is this element of subjectivity over, is a player interfering.
I would have disallowed that goal.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah,
because Sam Kerr was offside.
Okay.
And then she came back into an onside position and bumped the defender, who the ball went over her head. So for me, even though I'm not entirely convinced that the assistant would have read that situation at the time, I think that was the right call.
Okay, not a bad result for Chelsea anyway. 2-2 away to Real Madrid. It'll be interesting to see how that plays out with Emma Hayes now having announced that she will be moving on a la Sven with Lazio before joining England.
Well, a la Alex Ferguson as well. Yeah.
And obviously Alex Ferguson had his final Champions League game was against Real Madrid with the controversial nanny sending off that he completely went berserk at.
Final Champions League game?
And Emma Hayes is almost replicating that with the Chelsea and the officiating decisions. But, I mean, Chelsea have got to be among the favourites this year.
With the qualifiers being so brutal, with United, Arsenal, Wolfsburg going out, it's actually quite a weak competition now. You can always predict the final four.
Who's already the final four then, Adrian?
Oh, now you're putting me on the spot.
Well, no, you literally just said that.
Well, Lyon, I would imagine.
Yeah. And Barcelona.
PSG, Barcelona, yeah. Chelsea for sure. And then you're probably looking at who have we got left? PSG or Bayern Munich?
Bayern, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but there's not much outside of those five.
Okay. Guest producer Jesse's just popped his head around the door to say that VAR will be coming into this competition from the knockout
guest appearance
stages.
That's a nonsense as well. Like, they do that in the FA Cup. Like, it depends where the game is, whether it's got VAR or not. I mean,
the final will be played, by the way, on the 25th of May at the San Mamés. So that'd be nice in Bilbao. Lovely. Anyway, that's enough about that. Let's quickly round up the other Euro qualifying things that are happening over this crucial period. Wales, we mentioned it's a big week for them. They are away in Armenia Saturday. If Wales win and Croatia lose their game, which sees them in Latvia, then Wales will be qualified for the Euros. If not, Rob Page's side will need to match Croatia's result to maintain their advantage heading into the final match on Tuesday when they take on Turkey. Of course, Turkey have already qualified and in style under their spanking new manager, Vincenzo Montella. Wales haven't actually beaten Armenia in three previous meetings, in case you thought, oh, well, they'll do that. They got beaten by them last June, 4-2 in Cardiff. But Armenia are a bit bonkers. They can get results like that, but also lose against Latvia. Anyway, anything you want to say about Wales in Armenia, or should we move on to...
Well, no, I think it's a big game, isn't it?
It is.
It's a huge game. I think after that Croatia win, there's a feeling of sort of buoyancy. They're together, aren't they? Rob Page, remember, was under pressure. I think the CEO of the FAW was basically said his job was under threat ahead of that, which I think put a lot of noses out of joint. And he was quite emotional, I think, about beating Croatia. And it, you just wonder now, can they maintain it? I think they did brilliantly because you look at their team. And
yeah,
it's a champion. They'd be top half championship, but no better than that. Really,
post Bale world as well. You'd have forgiven them for not getting through these qualifiers.
Yeah, but they've got the reason I think they can do well against the bigger teams is that a lot of their better players or informed players are defensive. So they've got a lot of their Premier League experienced players are members of their back five. Yeah, Joe Rodon is playing particularly well for Leeds. You've got Connor Roberts in there and others. And then you've got Ethan Ampadu in central midfield, who's really coming into his own now. He's obviously been around a while. I think he's finally found a home at Leeds. And he's become absolutely integral to Wales. I couldn't believe how good him and Jordan James, who's like a bit part player at Birmingham, were against Croatia. You know, the all-star Croatian midfielder. Was it Kovacic, Modric, Brozovic? And they were just too strong. But this is a different test. They have more of the ball. Can they make things happen? We'll have to see. I mean, maybe the pace of Brennan Johnson, who I think would be fit for this one, that might make the difference.
Ooh, okay, mm. Saturday afternoon in Armenia. Elsewhere, Saturday, you got some big action in Group B where France are already through, and it's going to be either Netherlands, probably, or perhaps Greece who join them. Netherlands are taking on Republic of Ireland on Saturday. Republic of Ireland could still make it through the playoffs, whereas Netherlands will seal their spot at the finals if they get a win in this. It would actually benefit the Republic of Ireland that they lose as well because of that playoff scenario. Colin?
Yeah, this is one of the well, it is the flaw with this qualification process, whereby you've got the Nations League groups, which are sort of relevant and sort of tied into this. So Republic of Ireland essentially want the Netherlands to qualify automatically, because if Greece were to qualify automatically, the Netherlands would be forced into a playoff spot, which would sort of essentially rob the Republic of Ireland of a potential playoff spot because of their Nations League results. So this is something that you're going back to results from maybe 2 years ago in terms of determining who ends up in a playoff, which to me seems wrong. Even the fact that we have to explain this shows that it's convoluted, shows most fans don't understand it, and if fans don't really understand it, they're going to think it's a bit of a mess. It's not really a proper setup.
It's like that famous badminton match in 2012, the Olympics. Do you remember?
Say famous.
For me, I think of it daily. Can Stephen Kenny's side get the defeat when they need it most?
It is what they are best at the moment. I honestly, I've seen
go out there, boys. Get a defeat. You can do it.
I've seen a couple of their matches, and I mean, look, it's just the player, but they don't have the player pool. I think the situation at the minute with Stephen Kenny is that there's a general lack of belief that things are going to work at this point. So I wouldn't be optimistic, but they might sneak into a playoff spot.
Yeah, I mean, I guess you could say, if I know he's not fit this time, but if Evan Ferguson is fit for playoffs, then that's your chance. But I mean, I'm hoping with, as Colin was saying, with the confusion about all this, that it just ends in a really confused argument in a pub somewhere where one fan's like semi cheering because Ireland start losing and someone doesn't understand.
It's just wrong, isn't it? Group H Friday night is a little bit more black and white. Denmark and Slovenia, joint top in the group, facing each other in Copenhagen, and the winners will qualify. Kazakhstan in the mix, should it end up a draw or something like that. They are taking on Slovenia on Monday night, but they got San Marino at home before that. Oh, I'm getting confused already. But Denmark facing Slovenia. Who do you want to go through from Group H and
why? Kazakhstan would be great, wouldn't they?
Yeah, you want Kazakhstan?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Kazakhstan are really well organised. They're a team who you kind of think their away record would be abysmal, because it historically has been, because of obviously their location. It's not an easy thing to be travelling around Europe for them, but
it's not in Europe for starters. But.
Well, exactly, and they are a team who actually impressed me against Northern Ireland in both games, in the sense Northern Ireland obviously had to have a bit more of the ball, which you're not used to. They just had no idea how to break them down, and they capitalised on the mistake. And this expanded tournament, 24 teams, is you want to see nations like Kazakhstan or Luxembourg or elsewhere challenging for at least a playoff spot and a chance to qualify. And that group has really been very, very competitive, apart from San Marino and Northern Ireland, quite sadly, on my behalf. But I mean, Denmark will go through. And I think Slovenia will probably get the job done on the final day. But again, Slovenia have two very good strikers. Obviously, Benjamin Sesko anytime I've seen him, he just looks so impressive. I think they'll get it done.
But Slovenia currently top of the group on criteria, level on points with Denmark. If Denmark do beat them at home on Friday and Kazakhstan get the win against San Marino, then it'll all be down to that game on Monday between Slovenia and Kazakhstan. Wow. All right. Well, thanks for whipping up my excitement about Group H. What can you do with Group E, where Albania, checks notes, are top, 2 points ahead of the Czech Republic. Poland, who have the potential playoff route, are in third place, but only 3 points off the top. But hey, hang on. Having played an extra game, wow.
Yeah, Albania are coached by former Arsenal and Manchester City fullback Silvinho, who has had a couple of rather unsuccessful managerial stints, but he's done a really good job. He's won 5 of his 7 games.
Right.
He's also assisted by Pablo Zabaleta and yes, and Doriva, who Middlesbrough fans might be familiar with.
What a lineup!
That's the only time we see Zabaleta these days is punditry duties for a major tournament. So yeah, he won't be on punditry duties potentially.
Well, possibly not. When you say some unsuccessful, I mean, Silvinho's stint at Lyon was legendarily bad.
Yeah, exactly. And these are, you get this sort of hodgepodge of international football managers who seem to adjust to the international game a lot better. I don't know why that is. Maybe just the fact that they don't need to focus so much on sort of coaching and the tactical side of things, but more just getting players together and creating a sort of spirit in the squad.
Yeah, well, exactly. Vibes. Okay, and Albania, what are they like?
Well, they've got quite a lot of Serie A based players. Armando Broja is the only Premier League player involved. He's not in this squad. I think he's out injured again. So they don't have a lot of star names. And Albania have historically struggled by the fact that a lot of players of Albanian heritage have, like Granit Xhaka or Jerdan Shaqiri, have played for Switzerland or for elsewhere. So they do seem to have finally kind of settled on a stream of players who are now choosing to play for them. They were at the Euros in 2016, and they're on the verge of qualifying again. So it's another historic moment for them.
Yeah, they got some of the agent, remember, Anis Mometi at Wickham, now at Bristol City. He hasn't really broken into their team much yet, but he's a really good talent. And
he's very silky, isn't he?
Mm. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, as we said earlier, you know, it's that extra 8 teams that are going to get through where it's the interesting stories and, you know, not the usual big giants or struggling giants.
Adrian, guest producer Jesse has just reminded me that we never cleared up what your on-stage appearance was on Wednesday.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Handbrake Off Live.
Woo!
Yeah, the Arsenal podcast brought to you by The Athletic. Honestly, it was so much fun. Really, really good.
Uh-huh.
We got a good squad. Ian Stone, obviously stand-up comedian, is our host, so he was in his absolute element. Nice. It was good to see him in his natural habitat. And then there was myself and Amy Lawrence and James McNicholas, who himself has done stage shows as an actor, as a comedian before. So yeah, honestly, it was brilliant. It was a sellout and lots of giggles. Hopefully we'll get to do it again sometime.
Brilliant. Oh, that does sound good. Do you have any plans for a next one?
No, but we're up for it.
Okay, in the meantime, you can hear the Handbrake Off podcast,
it's on, Mondays and Thursdays. Mondays and Thursdays. This particular one was saved for the ticket buyers only, so it wasn't recorded.
Oh, right.
But yeah, we're back
on
Monday.
If only UEFA had adopted that policy. And, of course, you're also very much key to the What the EFL podcast. Football League this weekend?
There are a handful of EFL games. I mean, it's amazing. There are only 2 matches in League One because of international call-ups. You know, that shows that the standard of football has to be a lot higher. Well, a lot of these players, I'm imagining, are in the under-21s or the youth teams.
What about League Two? Have they had any?
League Two have got a few postponements. MK Dons is off. Oh, big game with AFC Wimbledon. That's off. Doncaster Walsall's off. Morecambe versus Crewe.
Because of international call-ups?
Yeah. I mean, these aren't games you'd expect to be
off. An argument now that League One should be included in the, you know, not having a set of fixtures when international.
I think so. Yeah. It's just Blackpool, Shrewsbury, and Stevenage Mail Club who are flying high in League One. They're at home to Lincoln City if you fancy going to a game.
And you're anywhere near Stevenage.
And you like Time Waster.
And you like what?
Time Waster.
That's a bit. Just been a bit of Wickham fan.
Have there been some episodes with Wickham this year?
we're Total Football now, so yeah.
All right then. We won't waste any more of your time, listener. Because that's it for today's show. Many, many thanks to Colin for your sparkling debut. And it was Colin's first time actually in the studio. We didn't mention this because all your previous appearances were during either lockdown or when you were somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was always done remotely. Yeah. So yeah, being in the Athletic Studios is it's quite a privilege.
Nice. Well, that's very a privilege for us to have you here. And you too, Adrian.
Yeah, no, it's been a pleasure.
Fantastic. Also, Duncan Alexander, guest producer Jesse and Rachel, and you listener. What do we have for you next? Well, on Monday, we'll be rounding up the events so far and getting excited about the final set of qualifiers and that kind of thing. So, hey, join us then. Have a great weekend. In the meanwhile, from all of us here, it's goodbye.
You've been listening to The Totally Football Show, part of the Athletic Podcast Network. Discover bonus video content by searching for The Totally Football Show on YouTube and see the very latest subscription offers at theathletic.com/totally.
The Athletic.